Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Welcome, welcome. You are listening to the VBAC Link podcast. And guess what? We have a special guest for you today, and that is me. It's Julie Franco. I am here today with Megan, and I am joining her for a really cool information-packed episode, kind of debunking some common misunderstandings about VBAC and showing you what the evidence is and where you can find more evidence-based information about VBAC. So without further ado, your host, Megan. How was that?
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Julie, for the amazing welcome. It's so fun. Yes, I'm so excited for this episode because it's one of the last episodes with you and I. No, it's not one of the last episodes. It is the last episode of you and I of the year, which is really so crazy to me. Really so crazy.
And this year has flown. Time is wild.
It's so strange to me. But that's okay. We will welcome in 2025. And we will say goodbye to 2024. And we want to say goodbye to it with, like she said, just a really great evidence-based packed episode for you guys. I feel like all year we've gotten messages like, I had a C-section. I'm being told I can't ever have a vaginal birth. Is this true? Is VBAC safe or possible? We've had it to multiple, right? I've had one and two C-sections. I've had three C-sections. Is VBAC possible? My provider gave me a 20% chance to VBAC. Is that true? Can I VBAC? Do I really have that low of a chance? How about this one? This one was more recent than I've heard from us recording. Is you have a 60% chance of uterine rupture if you choose to VBAC. Ugh. Seriously, so many things that we have heard along the way where it's just
lies. It's lies. Let's just call
it aggravating
lies. And I don't think, and I honestly, for the most part, I do not think that providers mean to spread lies or spread misinformation. I do think that there is a lot of information related to birth in general, but especially VBAC, about this is the way we've always done it. Or they're just regurgitating information that they heard from some other unreliable source somewhere and aren't really taking the time to keep up with the actual facts about VBAC, about birth, about anything in general. And they also our system is not set up for continuing education to all our providers and all the things. Our hospital providers are I feel like in some capacity, we have to give them a little bit of grace because they're incredibly overworked. They work crazy hours, see lots of things, deal with a lot. The medical system is just kind of nuts. But also, I feel like whose responsibility is it to make sure that you're providing the best care, right? But how can you when the system's working against not only the parents, but also the providers and the nurses and everybody, right? So it's really hard because it puts the responsibility on you, the parent, in order to really dig and discover what your options are so that you can make the right choices that benefit you because the system is not set up to support you in any other way besides their hospital policies and following their rules, etc. So yeah, I don't want this to turn into a provider bashing episode, and I don't think it will either. And sometimes
No.
I feel like, especially with me talking and being extra salty now, it feels like it can come across as we are anti-provider or whatever, which we're not, but the system is just really frustrating. And it takes everybody's
Yeah.
efforts to try and change it. Everybody's efforts, and not one part of the system can be passive if we want to change it and we want to influence it for better.
Yeah, I agree so much. And I, like you said, like we don't want to ever shame the hospital system or providers, but a lot of the times the things that we're saying definitely does do that. It happens, but it's because there's a lot of fault. There's a lot of fault in these areas. And like you're saying, there are a lot of these things are lies. And the biggest and hardest thing that I found when I was going through my VBAC journey, and Julia, I wanted to speak for you and probably say that is same for you. And that's why we created the VBAC Link How to Prep VBAC course, is because we didn't know what was right and what wasn't. Right? We just didn't know. And there were so many avenues on Google that you could go down and you could actually find truth on both sides sometimes, even.
Yeah. Well, and trying to figure out which is true and credible and what's not sometimes is really tricky.
It's really tricky. And so we want to talk more about that today. We recently talked about hospital policies and what that means and how to go about those. But along with hospital policies come a lot of other things that providers do or suggest or say. And so we've got this random policy that was created over here, and then we've got all these random things that are saying over here, and we want to know our options. So we know hospital policies are what they are. And if you haven't listened to the episode, go listen. It's back in November last month. Go look for it. But today we're going to be talking about what is the evidence? What are the facts? Right? So let's talk about the VBAC calculator. Let's just start right there because this is where a lot of providers actually begin to determine someone's ability or qualifications if they can VBAC. They'll pull out this list, this calculator that is online. You can actually get it online. If you want to play around with it, I'll try and make sure to put the link in our show notes because I actually find it very interesting to play around with. We used to do that when we would do in-person courses. We would have everyone pull up their phones and pull up the VBAC calculator and type in different scenarios. And it was pretty mind-blowing to see how much it could change based off of the answer that you give this computer, right? So a provider, you want a VBAC. You've determined a VBAC is something that you want to explore. You want to learn what you can do to have a VBAC. You go into your provider and you're like, hey, I had a C-section and I don't want that experience this time, or I want a different experience. I would like to have a VBAC, or what they would call a TOLAC, trial of labor after cesarean. And they're like, great, that's wonderful. And then they're like, let's talk about it. And they da -da -da -da, pull up their little calculator and they ask you questions like, what, Julie?
They ask you questions like, hold on, I was just digging into the history of the VBAC calculator a little bit more because I was curious about it. They ask you, what was the reason for your previous cesarean? How much do you weigh? It used to ask what your ethnicity was because, and then they docked you if you were Black or Hispanic. It also asks, let's see,
Asks for arrest, like the arrest of descent. So arrest
yeah,
descent
so
for
like,
previous sincerity if your
yeah.
baby didn't come down. It asks about your history, as in like, have you had a vaginal birth before? Right? Have you had a VBAC? What was the reason for your previous cesarean? There, it even asks if it treats you, if you've been treated for hypertension. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. So high weight,
Oh,
like.
because the chronic hypertension requiring treatment is what replaced the
Induction.
race. So they
Oh.
replaced the race question with how do you have chronic hypertension requiring treatment? It may serve as an obvious proxy for race and appears to function similarly in the revised calculator in terms of statistical performance.
My gosh, yeah, it says right on the website. The information on this website describes the outcome of vaginal birth after cesarean and term pregnancy for population individuals who receive care at hospitals within blah 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 network. And it just says information from this website is not intended to be only basis for making care decisions for individuals, nor is it intended to be definitive, meaning it's not going to be like, yes, you have to have this, or this is the exact chance of you having a VBAC. But yet we have so many providers that go off of this as in like point blank fact.
Like it's law, like it's, crystal
Yes.
ball.
Really though, it's so frustrating. So sorry, what were you gonna say before I
No,
started
I just
mentioning
sent
that?
you this link, what I was digging into. It's so interesting about the VBAC calculator. It's interesting because, well, first of all, a couple things. So the likelihood of the VBAC calculator being accurate for you, the higher your percentage of having a successful VBAC, the more likely it's going to be. So it's more accurate when the predicted success rates are above 60%. The lower your success rate, the more likelihood it is to be inaccurate. And do you know what that tells me? That tells me that most people who attempt a VBAC are going to be successful. Like that's what that tells me, right? And
Yeah.
it's just so stupid because, I mean, the development of the calculator, they developed it in the early 2000s, and it actually, from the outside, kind of looks like a good sample size. There's 11,856 people with one prior cesarean between 1999 and 2002, and it was analyzed whether they had a successful VBAC or an unplanned repeat cesarean. And it was analyzed retrospectively. So retrospectively means they looked back on births. It doesn't mean that did the study when people were pregnant. They looked at it after it had already been done. So I like retrospective studies because there's like it really removes the chance for bias related to the study. So the interesting thing is that the risk factors that they chose were related to BMI, if you're overweight, okay? So age, history of prior vaginal delivery. So did you have a prior vaginal birth or not? If the prior cesarean was because of labor dystocia, so which is like stalled labor, or and your race, Black or Hispanic ethnicity. And then they used these criteria to determine whether or not you were going to be successful in having a VBAC. Now, here's the stupid thing about this is what it doesn't take an account into is the bias in our system against people of color and against people that are overweight. It does not take into account the bias and the medical way, different ways people that are overweight and people that are not white are treated in the system. So I feel like, I mean, there's just so many flaws against it as well, but also, I don't know. It says here that, sorry, before I get to my also, it says here, first of all, there's only 19 academic hospitals were included. So I feel like the sample size, 19 academic hospitals, like university hospitals, and is between 1999 and 2002. I feel like also there was a lot of backlash from all the controversy surrounding uterine rupture in the mid 1900 or mid 1990s, from that carrying over into that as well. So, like, if you didn't know this, they started inducing VBACs with Cytotec in like the mid 1990s, and it increased the risk of uterine rupture like crazy. And I'm not going to do a history lesson right now, but this was only 4 years after that, after all of that, 4 years from the start of that. And so there's probably still a lot of fear and everything related to uterine rupture and everything in play with during all of the time that they were collecting this data. Sorry, I'm probably getting like really nerding out right now. But the thing is that when the predicted success rate, like I said before, was over 60%, they tended to be more accurate when it was less than 60%. So accuracy of lower estimates was mixed, but generally decreased as predicted success rates declined. And I said this before and I'll say it again, but my first client ever as a doula had a predicted success rate of 4%, four, like the number 1, 2, 3, 4. You count to four. That was her predicted success rate. And she pushed her baby out in 20 minutes. So I think the VBAC calculator is garbage, but also ACOG says in their most recent guideline, actually for the last couple VBAC bulletins that they have put out, is that a low chance of success is not a good reason to exclude somebody from attempting to have a VBAC. But yet there are so many providers that will not take you if your chat predicted chance of success is less than 60%. But what did we just say? We just said that if your predicted success rate is less than 60%, it's less likely to be accurate. Isn't
Well,
that
and
stupid?
yes, well, another thing that I have noticed within providers that do the VBAC calculator is that if not only if they say your chances are lower, if they're doing it and it is lower than that 50, 60%, they automatically go in their mind a lot of the times and they're like, oh, she has a lower chance. And they may still kind of start being tolerant, but I think it's something to watch out for. If your provider is pulling out this calculator and putting too much weight on the calculator, it might be something to watch out for and understand that there may be a bait and switch coming up, or that provider may not end up feeling comfortable with you being able to VBAC or TOLAC, right? We've talked about this with other providers where they say, like, sometimes providers aren't comfortable. And that is a really good time to say, like, okay, you're not comfortable with this. I am comfortable with this. We're not a good match.
Yes. Don't let your provider dictate how your birth goes. Here's, I love that you brought that up, Megan, because I saw a post. I'm in a member of a Facebook group for labor and delivery nurses. There's like 12,000 labor and delivery nurses in there. Like, and I'm mostly quiet. I mostly just watch because I like seeing the climate of the profession and the attitudes around birth, VBAC, birth photography, doulas, etc. And there was a post, actually was this morning in there, and the nurse asked, what is your hospital's protocol around vaginal breech deliveries? And I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And so I went through the comments and I was like stalking the comments because I know that having a vaginal breech delivery in a hospital is a freaking unicorn. Okay. It's a unicorn. You just don't really see it. And it was interesting to see the labor and delivery nurses' comments, but one of them stuck out to me. And I almost commented back, but I pulled myself back and I'm like, this is for labor and delivery nurses. I don't want to like stir the pot. I'll stir this pot in other places, but I don't want to stir the pot in this community, right? Most of the time. And so, but one of the nurses said that vaginal breech delivery carries risks and it is up to the provider and patient to decide what risks are safest and what risks to assume. And I kind of rolled my eyes at that because it should be like that. It should be the provider and the patient together to decide the risk. But how often is it the provider only who decides the risks that these patients are going to take on? No, it's not the patient and the provider. It's the
The
provider
provider.
deciding. It's the provider deciding. Nowhere in the converse in the normal, typical, standard conversation does it include provider and patient making decisions. Not real ones, not when they disagree, not when they want a little flexibility, or not when they want to go against hospital policy, right? I mean, there are sometimes, but like it's really rare.
Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today. It reminds me, this comment kind of reminds me of the many scenarios that I see or hear within my own clients here in Utah of, hi, I really want to be back. I met with my provider and they said they would let me do, right? So it reminds me of the let me. Like this provider looked at me, read my history and said, this is what I can and cannot do. This is what they'll let me do.
Or they plugged me into the calculator.
We're losing that conversation. And women of strength, I encourage you to go forward and have conversation with your providers, especially if you are getting this kickback, especially if you're not being told the risks for both VBAC and repeat cesarean, right? And you're just being told, oh, well, you have a 46% chance of VBAC based off of this calculator. So I'll let you try, but don't count on it. Seriously, if I hear any more providers like, oh, so
fun. Like they're doing you a favor, right? We'll let you try. Okay, you can try. Or they say, but you have to go into labor by 40 weeks or we'll schedule a C-section, but we won't induce you. So you blah, 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 blah. You know, like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
We're trying to like be the savior. We'll let you try.
Yeah. But don't stand for that unless that's what you're okay with, right? Like I can't tell you, no, you do not get to see anybody like that. Like that's not my place. But I will say, if you're having a provider in the very beginning pull out this calculator telling you that they'll let you try, but the chances are low, your pelvis hasn't done it before, don't know if it will do it again, cervix didn't dilate to 10, right? These are problems. These are red flags. So, okay, VBAC calculator, we kind of talked about it. We talked about the stats. We talked about our rant. Now, let's talk about uterine rupture. This is a big one that I feel like hovers. It's that dark cloud.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah, well, that hovers over people and their fear. And I see it daily within our community. I really want to be back. A different experience is so important to me. But in the end, I'm so scared. I'm so scared of uterine rupture. Okay, valid. I just want to validate your feelings right now. It's okay that you feel scared. It's valid that you feel nervous about it. It's also understandable that you may feel extra nervous about it because the outside world talks so poorly about it. They make it sound scary, okay? It is scary. It is scary, but
it can be, yeah. When it happens, yeah.
Yes, when it happens, it can be. But the chances are actually quite low, you guys. And we want to talk a little bit about, I know we've talked about it in the past, but I feel like you can't talk about uterine rupture enough.
Yeah, it keeps coming up. So we'll keep talking about it.
Keeps coming up. So, okay, let's talk about one C-section. You've had one C-section. Your baby didn't come down. You pushed for 2 hours. You had a C-section. You dilated to a 5. You didn't progress. They did all the interventions. You had a C-section. Got an epidural. Your blood pressure dropped. Your baby didn't do very well. Decelerations. You had a C-section. Okay? There's lots of scenarios of why we have C-sections. One C-section. Julie, let's talk about the evidence of uterine rupture after one C-section.
So here's the thing, right? There are multiple studies out examining uterine rupture and things like that. It's interesting because there, I feel like, Yeah, it does vary. So there are some studies with very small sample sizes that have 0% uterine ruptures in their studies. And there are some studies that show higher rates. Now, what I have found as I've been digging is the studies that are the most credible, most reliable, will usually you'll see a rupture, a rate of rupture between 0.2% to 0.9%. So I feel like if you have anybody telling you your chance of rupture is half of a 1%, or you have a 1% chance of rupture, or your chance of uterine rupture is less than 1%, or 1 in 200, or 1 in 100. All of those I feel like are
Incredible.
pretty accurate representations of what the actual risk of rupture is. Now, there's lots of things that contribute to that, of course, right? But I feel like if you ever have a provider telling you, oh, it's around 1%, I feel like that's pretty, yeah, I mean, cool. You know,
I feel like
and or one in
that's pretty
250, like
reliable to know that they're looking
within a
at
range.
some study that's within an accurate range.
Or like, 0.4%. I think one of the bigger studies that we cite in our course says 0.4%. And that's like 1 in 250, right? Like those are all what I feel like would be it for me personally. I would feel like, yeah, you're representing the data pretty
Zero.
accurately.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Sorry, I
Yeah.
feel like you're trying to lead this a certain direction. So I'm
No,
gonna
I'm not.
not go in the oh, okay,
No,
cool.
I'm not. Yeah,
Okay.
you're,
Well,
yeah, that's exactly
it's
something I wanted to talk about is how it can range. So you may see something that's 0.2 and you may see something that's 0.47 and you may see something that's 0.7. So I love that you pointed that out.
Yeah, and I think that that's why I find it the more I go on, I used to say 0.4% or half of a percent whenever somebody would ask me, what's the rate of uterine rupture, right? I would use that's the numbers I would go to, right? But now I'm just like, it's a little, I feel like it's a little more fluid and I feel like there's more nuance to it than that, right? So, yeah.
I usually say around 1%. So, what about people who are wanting to VBAC after two C-sections? Because this is another big ask, right? And then it gets even stickier
So sticky.
in a second. We'll be talking about three plus. So, evidence after two. Okay, two C-sections. Again, everyone has different reasons, but I was told slightly over 1%. Okay, so like 0.7 to like 1.1 to 1.4%.
Well, here's the thing too. There's not a lot of studies about VBAC after two cesareans. There's just not, but there are two large studies in the ACOG VBAC bulletin that ACOG cites, and it actually says that I'm actually going to quote the guideline right now. It says women who have had two previous low transverse cesarean deliveries should be considered for a trial of labor after cesarean TOLAP. However, other factors should also be considered when determining the likelihood of a successful VBAC. Now, here's the thing. It cites two studies in their bulletin. And the one study about as far as risk of uterine rupture, right? The one study that they cite shows that there is no increased chance of uterine rupture from after one cesarean and
So
after two
two.
cesareans. There is one that shows no statistical differences. Now, the other study that they references shows a double the risk of rupture. So what? 0.5% to 1%, 1 point, I think it was like 1.2% is what the ACOG bulletin says. I'm not sure. I don't have the number, or I don't have the actual bulletin pulled up right here in front of my face, except for that
And I feel like this is
one.
another thing where it depends on what you're reading. Like some of them are 1.1 to like 1.5%, like 1 to 1.5. And even that's like little higher on the end of the chances, right?
So the interesting thing is that ACOG even says that, and yet people are going to go and say double, triple, whatever. They're going to make up all of these
Crazy.
statistics. Now, gosh dang it, I literally had that.
There's
I love it. Do
a
you have it open?
no, the ACOG.
Yeah, I'm
Is
gonna
there
find
mine?
it
I
and quote it
don't.
exactly because we've been called out for this. We
Yes,
are
we
not,
have.
we literally quoted the exact phrase from ACOG and got thrown under the bus for spewing misinformation when it was literally a quote from ACOG, but whatever.
There is a while you're finding that, there is an article showing vaginal birth after two cesareans, and there's a systemic review and a meta-analysis of the rate and the adverse outcomes of VBAC after two. And it talks about VBAC after two success rate was around 71.1%, and the uterine rupture rate was 1.36%. So that's within this. And we'll have all of these here. If we're quoting something, we're going to make sure that we have it here in the show notes. So please, 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 please make sure to go down and check them out and read it out, because you're going to want more information. And we don't have all the time to go over through all of these, but really, I think these are such great reads. And then when it, sorry, are you, have you already found it?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Excuse me. I clear my throat. I'm ready. Cracking my knuckles. Let's go. Okay. This is what they said. And it's on page. Oh, do you know what? This is actually a PDF from an actual publication. So it's not going to be the exact page of what I said. So, anyways, there's a whole section called More Than One Previous Cesarean Delivery. Now, what it says about the studies, I'm going to quote it exactly. Okay. So, two large studies with sufficient size to control for confounding variables reported on the risks for women with two previous cesarean deliveries undergoing TOLAC. One study found no increased risk of rupture, 0.9% versus 0.7%, in women with one versus multiple prior cesarean deliveries. Whereas the other noted a risk of uterine rupture that increased from 0.9% to 1.8% in women with one versus two prior cesarean deliveries. Both studies reported some increased risk in morbidity among women with more than one prior cesarean delivery, although the absolute magnitude of the difference in those risks was small.
Send me that link so
So,
I can send the exact
yeah.
link into the show notes so everybody can
Yep.
go read more.
And it also says the likelihood, additionally, retrospective, remember, retrospective is looking back on data that already exists. Retrospective cohort data has suggested that the likelihood of achieving VBAC appears to be similar for women with one previous cesarean delivery and women with more than one previous cesarean delivery. Given the overall data, it is reasonable to consider women with two previous low transverse cesarean deliveries to be candidates for TOLAC and to counsel them based on the combination of other factors that affect their probability of achieving successful VBAC.
Hey, see, it's like they're even saying like that we that's reasonable. Here we are, it's reasonable. But then there are so many people that are like, nope, out of the question, unacceptable. We will not support VBAC after two C-sections.
And
And
actually, I also think that you might not, I don't think you're supposed to publish this.
oh.
So you might not be able to distribute it.
Oh.
Because, you just do a search on the dark web for ACOG VBAC Bulletin 205 PDF and it will pull up, I promise.
Okay. There you go,
I
everybody.
just don't want you to do
Give it a
anything
search.
illegal.
Yeah, give it a search. Give it a search. So I did want to talk, and then when it comes to three, right? When it comes to three, the hardest part for me with three C-sections being shut down is the evidence is still not there. Like the concrete evidence is just there's it's not being studied that much.
And even the studies that do exist, I don't have large, super large sample sizes. They're very old. I mean, they're like 20 plus years old, right? And so, like, that's the best data that we have to use. And sometimes those studies are just automatically disqualified because of their age, their smaller sample sizes, things like that. So it's hard
Yeah.
to make any definitive statements about its safety or risks.
Yeah. And then there's evidence with induction, increasing around 1.1-ish percent if you use Pitocin. A lot of people say we can't use Pitocin. It increases it astronomically. I mean, to some, 1.1% having that be the rupture, increase or whatever, that may make sense. But for a lot of people, 1.1% is still quite low. And then I did just want to throw out there that the risk of uterine rupture is not dismissed because you schedule a C-section. It's
That's
not.
true. In fact, you are more likely to undergo a uterine rupture during the cesarean than you are by attempting a VBAC.
You
There's
are? Because I
data.
thought it was like
Yes.
zero point
No,
zero
it's
two
in our
six.
course. I have the charts from the National Institute of Health.
All right, let's look,
You're
let's see.
because of the pressure during the surgical procedure, your
Yes, I
uterus is more
do know
likely to.
that.
Now, granted, it's probably quote unquote safer to have a uterine rupture on the operating room table because the baby's already coming out. But like there is data that shows that. I'm pretty sure there's graphs and charts in there from the National Institute of Health.
Yeah, I'm gonna go find it. Because yeah, I was reading about it and it was like 0.02%, but it's just really important to know that it's not just eliminated. Your risk is not just eliminated. Okay, let's talk about anything else you want to talk about with that? I'll look really quick. Okay, let's talk about epidurals and the risks that
Ugh.
we have with
I mean,
them.
not ugh about epidurals. Not that sound was not about epidurals in general.
No,
It was about where I know you're going with this. Sorry.
it's okay. I just want to talk about the risks with epidurals because a lot of people don't know that some of the things that happen after epidurals can be placed or things to do before if you're planning to get an epidural, like hydrating and making sure that we're good there. But I want to talk a little bit about epidurals and epidurals can do a few things. It can lower blood pressure. That's one of the most common that I have seen right out of the gate. Like, but it's given and the blood pressure drops. Mom's blood pressure drops. Baby stops responding
Baby's
very
heart
well.
rate slows a little bit too.
Yeah. In fact, 13 out of 100 women have epidurals cause low blood pressure. Okay. Epidurals can also cause increase infections. Now, yes, infections like in our back and stuff, but I'm actually talking about like vaginal, like because I feel like the vagina is like an open door once an epidural is placed
Well, then you
in a
have the
lot of
catheter
ways.
too
Yep,
that
we've got,
will give UTIs.
yep. Yeah, so we've got catheter, and then it's like, oh, I can check you. You can't feel it. I can check you. And so we just keep
More
introducing
cervical
bacteria.
checks
Yes.
increase infection.
Yes. It also can cause problems urinating because we've got this catheter and it can sometimes be placed for hours and hours
Out,
and
yeah. 24
hours.
hours sometimes, depending on how long you're in
Yes.
labor.
Yeah. So
Gosh.
approximately 18 out of 100 women will have urinary issues because of catheter and things like that. So kind of interesting. Epidurals can also cause itching. That's, I think, morph. Is there morphine in epidural? I think that's why.
Fentanyl.
Like, okay. Like, it wears off and it could cause itching. It could cause you to go so numb that you're unable to move and
But these
groove.
are
And
small risks.
they're
They're small
small.
risks. It's okay to
Yeah.
get, it's okay to have an epidural. Don't get scared out of having one if that's what you
Yes. So
want.
I
You can
want to
still
talk.
have a
Yes, and I want to
VBAC
talk about that. So we're just kind of
Yes.
going over these risks, right?
Yeah.
So going into what you're saying, there's an article that I'm reading right now. It talks about 75 out of 100 women who had an epidural were actually very satisfied with the pain relief that they received. Okay, 75 out of 100, that's really
Pretty good.
great. That's really great. Yeah. It says 50 out of 100 women who were very satisfied with the pain relief. So yeah, like of opioids, sorry. It says in comparison to 50 out of 100 women were very satisfied with pain for opioids. So there are risks to epidurals, but there's also a lot of great things that come with epidurals because we can be more present, we can have less trauma. It comes to a point sometimes where labor, we talk about like pain versus suffering. And if you're suffering, that's not going to usually lead to a positive experience, right? So, but let's talk about the just in case epidurals. We have talked about this before,
That was
but
what my thing was for.
yeah, I had a feeling that's yeah. But just in case epidurals, you guys, it's frustrating. We've talked about it before, but it just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. One of these days, I would like someone to sit down and try to make this make sense. You know? Doesn't make sense to
So,
you? Is there anything else you want to share on?
just in
Nothing
case
I've shared
epidurals, I
before.
just kind of want to do the math on it though. Like, just in case epidurals are, they don't make sense and it's not logical, guys. Like, just the idea is a lot of hospitals will have a requirement that you have to have an epidural placed, but not turned on. If you don't want it turned on, you don't have to have it turned on, but you have to have it placed just in case of a uterine rupture, so they can give you an epidural quickly and go get the baby out without having to put you under general anesthesia, because general anesthesia is riskier. That is true, right? So the problem with that is that in order for an epidural to be dosed to surgical strength, it takes 15 to 20 minutes to be dosed to surgical strength, even if it's turned on already. And if you have a catastrophic uterine rupture where a baby needs to be out in minutes, 15 to 20 minutes is not going to do it. You're going to be put under general anesthesia anyways, even if you have an epidural and baby needs to be out in seconds or minutes, then you will be put under general anesthesia. And if there is time to wait, there is time to do a spinal block in the OR. It takes effect in 5 minutes and boom, you don't have to be put under general anesthesia. So the math isn't mathing there. Whenever they do that, like I've had clients ask when they say, hey, just in case epidural, my clients will be like, but if even if I have the epidural turned on and you need to get the baby out immediately, how much time would it take to get that to, surgical strength? Or would I have to be put under general anesthesia anyways? And they'd be like, well, then we probably have to put you under general anesthesia if it's like a true emergency. Like every time you ask that to somebody, like the math just doesn't math. They can't explain it. So anyways, that's my 2 cents about that. I think that that is the most like the most nonsense VBAC policy ever, because you can't make it make sense. And it's not even that like make it make sense. Like you have people like say all about everything nowadays. Make it make sense, but this one just literally doesn't make sense. Anyways, okay,
Yeah,
there we go.
it does. It's a tricky one. It's a really tricky one. So there are risks to getting an epidural, but don't be scared of getting an epidural. Still okay. Still okay. Just know. So if you are getting an epidural, do things like hydrate, wait as long as you can. Make sure you go
Eat.
to the bathroom before, eat before. Yeah, get your blood sugar up. Trying to think of all the other things. Don't think that just because you get an epidural, you have to get cervical exams anytime they want. Yeah. It's okay to turn your epidural down if you decide it's too heavy.
But there are also some providers that will tell you can't have an epidural with a VBAC,
I
because then
know.
how will they know you have a uterine rupture?
Yes.
Anyways. The
Yes.
hospital policies that we see are just so different, and they change, and they're so drastically different, even from one hospital to the next in the same area. So, anyways.
Okay. Anything else that you want to cover or think that we should
No. Do
cover?
you think anything else pressing? I feel like we probably intended to cover more things, but we just keep chattering about it, and that's okay, because this is
That
some
is
good stuff in
okay.
this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. So if you guys have any questions or if you have any studies that you have found that contradict anything that we're saying, I always feel like share it. I would love to
Yeah,
read
send it
it,
over.
right? Because there are times where we miss updated studies or there are studies that we haven't seen. So please, if you have a study that one either contradicts or goes along or says something slightly different, just yeah, share it with us. You can email us at info@thevbacklink.com.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbacklink.com.